You're listening to the Denver Real Estate Investing Podcast, where it's all about helping you grow your Denver real estate portfolio. Here's your host, Chris Lopez.
Hey, good morning, everyone. Welcome to our February 2019 Roundup webinar. My name is Chris Lopez, and I'm joined by Joe Massey with me as well. So, Joe, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Chris. Happy to see you. I'm excited for the weather's warming up a little bit. It's pretty nice outside.
Feels like spring now.
It does kind of feel like spring. It's been chilly the last couple of weeks.
I know. So, about Joe, Joe is a great lender with Castle & Cook. He does lots of financing for permanent residence financing, plus long-term rentals. And one of my favorites, house hacking.
We do house hacking a lot. That's a new popular thing. A lot of people have not heard that term. I actually taught a class yesterday and people don't even know what it is.
But it is a cool, powerful wealth building concept.
Yeah, it really is.
So again, my name is Chris Lopez. I'm a real estate agent here at Your Castle Real Estate, and I help people buy house hacks and rental properties and do some real estate financial planning as well, kind of bringing together all the personal finances along with long-term wealth creation with real estate. So what this podcast is for, this is our monthly roundup webinar where we get together, and I'm using air quotes, it's our virtual cup of coffee, where we hang out, we talk shop. So we're going to talk market trends for last month, and we're going to talk two recent deals. And the deals for this month are two house hacks. So we'll dive into those numbers, but let's dive into market trends first. So I know a lot of you guys can't see this chart, but this is the chart for about the last 10 or 11 years that shows the active inventory along with the how much was sold. So it's got the line that shows how much inventory there is and how many houses were sold.
The orange line is the inventory, the orange one, right?
Yeah, the orange one across the top is how much is sold. So I always like to look at this every month because I think it tells such an interesting story.
Yeah.
And as most of you guys know, since you've probably listened to a few of our podcasts now, we've actually started seeing some market changes here in the, since 6 months ago,
yeah, about
7 months
ago? Yeah, yep.
I mean, like we're actually seeing some more inventory. So right here at the very end where we currently are at, I'm going to get my mouse working.
There you go. Now you can see it.
Now we're fancy. So we got my electric laser pointer pointing on here. So we are in March. And what does March mean in Denver's real estate market, Joe?
We are about to hit the super hot time that is going to be just a zoo for buyers and sellers out there.
Yep. And so what that means is, what does that mean to inventory?
That means inventory, well, traditionally will go up because people want to start listing their homes in the spring when it's a good time to sell, when it's a little bit easier. You're thinking about kids getting out of school. You're thinking about spring break. Inventory is going to go up, but guess what else is going to go up? Buyer activity.
Oh, yeah. And I've definitely noticed that from bumping into some other people open houses and dealing with multiple offer situations again.
Yeah, we're actually starting to see that. I had a client over the weekend. He, high price range, actually, like 570. He was an offer on a property. There were seven other offers, and he unfortunately did not win, was not the highest offer. But first one of those I've seen in, 6 months.
Yeah. Yeah, we've seen a couple of those last couple of months. Market's getting hot out there.
Yep.
Especially with interest rates starting to, I think, drop as well.
That's right.
So kind of jumping to the next slide, this is where we can actually see some more data. This is a lot of the same data on the previous slide, but it's actually a bar chart, and it shows the last year. So I always like to do the big picture and then come over to year over year. So on the big picture, where we're actually kind of bottoming out for the year, that trough, it has been a higher trough, meaning more inventory than we've seen the last about 3 years. I think right around the same mark we were 4 or 5 years ago. And so it definitely means more inventory, but we're still in a seller's market. So if you look at February 2018, so 1 year ago, there were about 4,100 residential homes listed. That means single family and condos. So detached properties, townhomes, and condos. We were about 4,100 in February 18. Fast forward to February 19, and we're at just over 6,000. So that's almost a 50% increase, if I can do my math correctly.
You did.
Yes, so almost a 50% increase. And, we've started seeing the same thing when we looked at January over January, December over December. We were right around that same thing, right around like that high 40 percentile as far as percentage increase. So you hear that percentage increase, 50%. That sounds dramatic.
Staggering.
But
50% sounds like the sky is falling. But I don't think it is, because we're going from 4,100 listings, which is abnormally low, to 6,000 listings, which is still really, really low.
Yes.
Not abnormally low, but it's still really, really low. So 50% sounds like, oh my God, we should panic. The market is crashing. No, it's not. The market is moving back towards a more normal phase.
And it still has a long way to move back more toward to a more normal phase. So yeah. I flip back to the previous slide showing the last few years. And if, you know, where we're bottoming out for this current cycle, if you erase 18, 2018, 2017, 2016, and 2015, all of those had lower inventory over the fall and winter. But going all the way back to 2014, we still have less inventory than we did in 2014. So if you erase these last couple of years, like the last 4 years of inventory data, we are still basically at record low inventory.
Yeah.
So it feels a lot more dramatic because we've just had the pedal to the metal. We, the markets had the pedal to the metal the last 4 years, and now it's just coming off, the foot's coming off the gas a little bit. So it feels very drastic. But in the big picture, we are still in very much a seller's market. And that's why Joe just said there was an offer with, or a house with seven offers.
Seven offers. At a high price range, $570,000.
Yeah, and right. I dealt with the same thing. I mean, we're in the, you know, 200s, 300s, 400s.
Yeah.
And we're getting three, four, five competing offers right now.
Yep.
So going actually to some data, so we can see some numbers here. We can see the active data from last February, this February is actually 47% up from last year. So I did my math incorrect. We only 47%, not 50%. But new listings are up a little bit. So we had about 5,100 new listings this month and about 4,700 new listings last February. Now, under contracts are up as well, up about 11% from year over year. So 4,600 properties under contract this February, as opposed to about 4,200 last February. And then days on market for the average. This is an interesting thing because we have about 39 this February is the average days on market and about 32 a year ago. So we are, 7 days longer days on the market. Again, that follows the same trends we've been talking about, just more inventory. So there's slightly, longer days on markets on average for properties. But if people are still, if you're in a competitive price range, so, you know, like sub 500 out here in the Denver market, especially your sub 400, and you do some basic marketing right on your listing and you have the property priced correctly, not overpriced, not testing the market, we are still seeing many scenarios where, great, the property goes live on that Saturday, they have the open house, and they're taking offers by Monday and making a decision Monday night or Tuesday morning.
Yep.
So it's still very competitive out there. So for new properties on the market, you still have to go out there, hustle, look at it right away, and deal with that multiple offer environment. But there's still a lot of other properties out there that are not marketed well, or they might be overpriced. And these are the ones that we really like, because those are the ones where we can get some wiggle room in price and also on the inspection items.
That's exactly right. Now, I want to kind of take us off on a little bit of a sidebar here. What you were describing, price the property correct. Don't overprice it. Don't, air quote, test the market, right? Terrible idea. We all know that. Can I share with you my experience? I just sold my home in February. So I think it'll just line up really well with the February roundup. So
yes,
with what you're talking about. So listed our home at $500,000 even. All right. We all know that pricing strategy. You're going to put it there. That way, if somebody that's looking from 450 to 500 is going to see it. Somebody looking from 500 to 550 is going to see it. We don't do Walmart pricing. We didn't list it at 499, right? $500,000. It was priced appropriately, matched up with the comps in the area. Put it on the market Thursday evening and pushed a ton of Facebook ads, a ton of ads out onto Zillow and Craigslist about our open house that was coming up on Saturday. We had 8 showings on Friday. We had the open house, had about, 12 families come through and look at it. We actually got an offer on Friday evening, but continued with the open house on Saturday.
I'm curious, were they above or below your ask price?
At.
They were hoping to come in and lock it up, right?
Yep, they were at ask price. So we received that offer on Friday evening, still had the open house, had, I think it was either 10 or 12 families come through, look at the home, accepted that initial offer on Sunday. So really, we had an offer within 24 hours of going on the market, accepted the offer within 72 hours of going on the market, closed 21 days later. Great transaction, very smooth, and I attribute it to pricing the property correctly, marketing, making sure that we had done all the things in order to list and sell that property and generate traffic and demand. It was clean. We had done all the maintenance. You know, we had taken all the appropriate steps in order to get top dollar for it. And I think that's where it can still be a great market to sell your home in a weekend if you price it appropriately and follow all the steps like we talk about a lot on this webinar.
Exactly. And so here's the other side of the coin. Since we're investors, I mean, 90%, probably more like 95% of what I do is on the buy side.
Right.
Joe, you're a loan officer. You don't really care about the sell side.
You work with the buyers. If you're a seller, you're not talking to me.
So please, people out there, please keep taking crappy photos with your iPhone and posting them on the website. Please keep overpricing the property because me and my clients, we like those properties.
Those are the properties that we love to buy.
Yes. All right. So that wraps up for the data, the market snapshot for this month. So nothing that's new in the last couple months, but definitely new over the last couple years. So end of the story. Recap: inventory is creeping up, but it's still a hot market out there. So, we'll go over this one too. This is the showing trends. So this is internal data that your castle, the brokerage, collects on all of its agents' own listings. So this is not data from the MLS. This is all their own internal data. And I find it incredibly fascinating because I think it's a very good leading indicator as to what might be happening. So basically, they track how many showings are being scheduled per property. And you can compare the last couple years. So in 2018, so about a year ago this February, we were right around 24 showings per property last February. And if you look at 2017, we were right around 18 showings per property. In 2015, we were right around 22 showings per property in February. And then if you look at 2018 or heard our podcast in the past, in about a month or two is when the showings actually started really dropping off, and they dropped off drastically in the September timeframe. And then for 2019, showings are still below the last couple of years, but they've picked up from January to February. So last month, we were at around 14 showings per property. And now we're about 16 showings per property. So not a huge difference, but it's an increase, which to me shows, hey, more buyers are out there looking, which just goes with everything we've just been saying. Multiple offer situations, you're yep. bumping elbows at open houses, yep. you run into agents when you have a showing scheduled oftentimes. So buyer activity has picked up from what it did a month ago, but it's still below what's been the last couple of years. But it was not this drastic, like if you look at 2018 over this previous fall and winter, it had really dropped off and was actually below the 2012 levels, which was still in the recessionary times. So we are above the recessionary times as far as like traffic per listing, but we're below the really hot times. So we're in between those two things, which, as Joe was saying a few minutes ago, probably means the market is starting to become more of a balanced market in the near future.
Yeah, yeah. It's moving more towards normal. It's still very much a seller's market, but not very, very, very much a seller's market that it was a year, 2 years ago. So I'm actually really excited with the direction that things are going because I work with buyers, right? Yep. I don't work with sellers. Buyers are a big source of my business, or the source of my business. I'm kind of excited in the direction we're going.
So here's our monthly indicator, and this was something we pulled out of the Wall Street Journal, and it's just it's a graph with lots of stuff going on, so I'll definitely post it to the website. You can click that link in the show notes or near the video if you're listening or watching to the recording, but basically what the caption says is there is substantial pent-up demand for housing. More than 50% of 18 to 24-year-olds are living with their parents. And I'll describe what's going on in the graph here. So it's got data going all the way back to the 1960s to present. So from 1960 to like 1980, it was like, but right around 10% for, it's broken down by gender, so men and women. So it's probably about 10% between the two gender groups. And then from 1985 to 2005, it crept up a little bit, but stayed relatively flat. I mean, we're looking between the two, maybe 11% on average between the two. But right around 2005 is when we actually start seeing the amount of 18 and 24-year-olds living with their parents starting to creep up.
Sorry, I don't want to cut you off. That bottom one is the 25 to 34-year-olds.
Oh, you're right. Thank you.
So that's really, you should be out of the house by then.
Yes. And that's actually, this is, I think, the more interesting day, because 18 to 24 is still young. A lot of people are in college, whatever.
Yeah.
But as far as the 25 to 35-year-olds, thank you. So this is like, you know, hey, great. You are out of your 7-year college degree program.
Right.
You should be on your own. And then on 2005, creeping up. So the men, they were at 2005, which is pretty flat. They were like, what's that, about 11, 12%.
Yeah, about 11.
And now from 2005 to present, it's now about 21%. So we're talking, you know, that's got some elevation to that graph there. Now for women, there are apparently fewer women still living at home.
Generally more responsible sex, let's be honest, right? They're generally yes. the more responsible gender.
I would agree with that. And looking at 2005, where it stayed relatively flat, they were right around 8-9%. Now going up to present, right around now, it's probably about 12%. So not as dramatic increase as males, but still an increase. So this is 25 to 35-year-olds. This is prime time for a lot of people are either living on their own for the first time or buying a property.
Right.
And so when you see that data, Joe, like what does that say to you? And this is not Denver specific. This is nationwide.
You know, what it says to me is that there are some things that are hanging up this group of people trying to buy their first home. And, you know, you see the stats just like I do. Maybe they're getting married a little bit later in life. Maybe they're having children a little bit later in life. Maybe they have student loan debt that holds them down longer. Maybe their income is not rising as much as prior generations. There's a lot of things that you could point to. But I think it really is just the overall trend that as people are aging, they're not quite as financially ready as prior generations. You know, I bought my first home at the age of 23, and I know some 23-year-olds now, and first off, they're responsible. They're great people, but I know they're not in the position to financially qualify for a home yet. And I don't know where, if I was, maybe I was weird, right? That I bought my first home at that early of an age, but maybe they have other forces working against them, whether it's student loan debt, wages are not increasing as fast. So I think there's a lot of things. I can't say here's why this is happening, but I think it's important to understand that it is happening.
Yes. And so, from my point of view and like the macro of this, it just means there's a lot of pent up demand and it'll continue to be great to be a landlord for the next, many decades to come.
Yeah. I don't think there's ever been a bad time to own property.
Yeah. So we do actually have a question here. Looking back here, Travis says, this is going back to a previous slide. So I'm going to read it, Joe, and you're going to have to help answer it since I can't read and think at the same time.
Is that Travis Spear asking questions?
Oh my gosh, I think it is.
Celebrity on the show. Yes. Wow. All right.
So Travis says, hey, more showings per listing month over month with more inventory. That's positive? ?
You know, I think it is. Will you go back to the prior slide?
Yes.
So I do think it is. So we have more showings per listing and listings are going up. Therefore, there's way more people. Let's just say listings are staying flat, but showings per listing are going up. That means there's more people looking. Listings are going up and there's more showings per listing. That means there's a lot more people that are going out and looking at property. So I think it's very positive. I think it's an opportunity to A, sell your property if you've been thinking about that, but B, it shows that it's still a good time to buy because everyone else is out there buying. If you're having to compete, that shows that I think there's going to be future demand and future price appreciation. So I think it's a very positive thing. I think it's a great question from Travis. Really appreciate him chiming in with that.
All right, so moving forward on to our first deal analysis. So this deal number one is a house hack, And Joe, I forget that a lot of people don't know what house hacking is because I eat, breathe, and live this stuff every day of the week. What is house hacking?
House hacking is buying a property and renting out a certain portion of the property to roommates, tenants, whatever it might be, and generating some income from that primary residence. Now, traditionally, it was, hey, let's buy a duplex. We're going to live in one side. We're going to rent out the other side. Or maybe let's buy a fourplex. We're going to live in one unit, rent out the other three units. Now, that's still a house hack. That's great. That's a great way to make initial wealth in real estate. Tricky part with buying a duplex, they're expensive. You know, duplex is now $600,000, $700,000, $1 million for a fourplex. That's not really a starter home, right? You're not going to buy a $1 million starter home. So what we're seeing, house hacking has sort of morphed into buying a home, a single family residence, and maybe renting out the basement. Buying a single family residence, renting out two bedrooms to your roommates. Buying something that has a carriage house in the back. A house hack that I saw recently, somebody bought a home and rented out the garage. They didn't rent out anything else, but they rented out the garage and they were at least generating some income from that.
As like a livable space or storage?
No, as storage.
Yeah.
As storage. So that was kind of a mini house hack, right? But they were still getting some positive rental income from that property. So house hacking really is buying a primary residence, using some of that extra space to generate cash flow.
So great summary, by the way.
Thank you.
So this first house hack is in Lakewood. It was near Florida and Wadsworth. So property details, it is a four-bedroom, three-bathroom house. Now, this is one of the properties I said a few minutes ago. It's the type of properties we like. It was overpriced. It was originally set at $425,000, and then it dropped to $415,000. Then it dropped to $399,000. So when it dropped to $399,000, we went and looked at it, and it wasn't because it just dropped. It was just that's when these house hackers started looking at purchasing their next house hack. And so we went and looked at it, and it definitely had some more showings too, because great, it dropped $16,000 in price and it was below that $400,000 mark, which triggers a whole bunch of new alerts and searches for people. So went out and looked at it. We actually put an offer in and we did not get the property. So it went under contract with the winning offer. And so it went under contract, and then I can't remember, a week, 2 weeks later, it fell out of contract and was back on the market. And I can't remember if we were talking to the listing agent and it called us, whatever. Anyway, we were keeping our eye on the property because we liked it. And we're like, hey, if something happens to it, let us know. Because about 20-25% of properties fall out of the contract. So if it's a property you like, hey, you've got a 1 in 4 or a 1 in 5 chance of it coming back on the market, statistically speaking. Right. So we always do that. And this is how we end up locking up actually probably more than 25% of our deals are situations like this. So went under contract, came back on the market, and came back right around, I think it was the same list price to put it back on there, but we knew it right away. We talked to the listing agent, and it was, I can't recall, it's nothing crazy that happened with the property. There was no crazy inspection item came up. Just for some reason, the buyers fell out. I can't remember if it was their financing or it got cold feet or whatever, but good news for us. But like I said, it'd been sitting on the market for a couple months. The seller was out of state, riding price drops going down, in contract, out of contract. Now I was like, okay, I just want to sell this property. I want some of that and come in here and, you know, take it off my hands. So we did some back and forth with the listing agent, talked to him about it, and we came in a little bit over $380,000 on our asking price. So this was, you know, 15, 16, 17 grand over their most recent price drop. And they said, great, we'll take it, but you're going to have to buy it as is. And I'm using air quotes as is, because in reality, when people write as is in contracts, it's pretty much worthless.
It already is in the contract that as is where is.
But what that means, it's not like, actually doesn't mean you can't request or change anything or come back with inspection objections. It's more just the way I read it is like, hey, the sellers are telling you, hey, look, don't expect us to do anything. You're buying this property. Hey, but that means you can still do the inspection. And once you do the inspection, you can still come back and ask for some items. So we came in, we got it locked up for a little bit over $380,000. They accepted our offer as is. And I think we had, you know, a standard standard closing time. Joe was doing the loan. I was doing the contract. And I think it was a standard about 28-day close time
deal.
Frame.
Yeah, nothing
so, you
exciting.
Know, regular. And, you know, we did all that normal stuff. So we did the inspection. And we did notice a couple problems with the house. You know, of course, all the normal stuff that inspection reports bring up. I mean, the average inspection report makes it look like the house is going to fall over in 2 days oftentimes with all the red they put on there. So you had all that normal stuff, and our buyers were comfortable with dealing all that normal stuff. But then there were two things that we just couldn't tell before. One, there had been an addition done onto the house or garage had been converted, but there was no HVAC, there's no heating to that part of the house. And that was, you know, supposed to be part of the living space.
I guess it gets chilly in the winter.
Yeah, that kind of does happen out here.
Yeah.
And there was also higher level, you know, the high levels of radon is over that 4.0 mark the EPA says you need to be concerned about. So we actually came back and said, hey, look, here are a couple things that came up. We swung by the property, but these were things that we couldn't tell on the initial walkthrough. And we want you to, you know, take care of it. And, you know, regardless, if they still said no, we were going to still take the property. But hey, might as well ask. We asked, I think we got around $1,200 back as a seller credit, basically to cover the radon. And then we were just going to deal with the, and we said, hey, look, we know this is an issue. We don't expect you to run heating out there, but look, this is something else we have to deal with. So make up for it. Hey, pay for the radon system for us. And guess what? They didn't blink an eye. They accepted and they signed the inspection resolution to get that done. And then we came in here and then sent the appraisal in. And I don't have the appraisal up on the PowerPoint. I don't know if you remember this, Joe, but we got it locked up for a blow right around 380. The appraisal came back, I think it was right around 395.
Yeah. So, I mean, I want to just comment here for a minute. One of the things that I love about this story, this property was on the market. Days on the market ended up being, I think, 35 or 45, something like that.
Yeah, it's not longer. It was well over a month.
Yeah, people say, so before we even look at the numbers, people say all the time, there's no deals on the MLS. It's so hard to find. You've got to have a magic wand to find deals out there. Before we look at these numbers, this was a property that was on whatever it was, 30, 45, 60 days, had multiple price drops. You ended up purchasing it for $45,000 less than the initial price, yet it's still appraised higher than your contract price. So let's just think about that for a second. The market shows that it is a super, super aggressive time. Sellers hold all the cards, yet with appropriate representation, appropriate search criteria, you're still able to find a great deal for the buyers. All right. So just put that aside for a second before we look at the numbers. Don't forget that, because I'm going to come back to that.
Great. And so let's jump into the closing statement here. Actually, you know what? Let me pause on here because I'm looking at my notes here. So give you context on these buyers. This is actually their second house hack.
Yep.
So they had, you know, it's not the first rodeo, so to speak. The first one is something they own, not too far away, and they rent it room by room while house hacking it. And they're clear, I forget the exact numbers, but they're cash flowing while living there like $1,500 plus a month. And so they know the drill with renting things out room by room, which, hey, that takes more management, but you get more cash flow.
Right.
So that's the trade-off. If you want more cash flow, great. Rent room by room and manage more. And frankly, you're sacrificing some because you are sharing living spaces with roommates.
That's right.
But you're living for free, you're making money.
Right.
So, I mean, that's the trade-off. And so they wanted to kind of do that same model because, like, man, it just makes, you know, it's so powerful. It makes so much sense. And so they're looking for places where they could come in here and, you know, add a bedroom, reconfigure things, add more living space to make it more attractive, not necessarily adding like a bunch of bedrooms, but having more living spaces so they can charge a higher premium on that month-to-month renting. Because great, if there's a kitchen and a kitchenette, or if there's two washer and dryers, or you got, you know, two living rooms, there's just more space. It makes it a much more comfortable environment living with roommates. I mean, I live with roommates. I'm sure you have too, right, Joe?
Yeah. I mean, for a long time, I lived with roommates. Yes. Yeah, it's fine.
So their play was great. Let's get a place with a good number of bedrooms and bathrooms, and we can add some additional living space to make it a comfortable place to charge premium on that month-to-month renting. Because, hey, if you're charging $600 versus $850 a month in rent, we'll multiply that across three rooms, and that's an extra $900 a month in rent right there. That's a lot of money.
That is a lot of money.
Great. So we are looking at, this is the closing statement, right? This is your closing
statement,
Joe.
This is our final closing statement.
So
yep, that's right.
You walk us through this.
Yeah. So really, we'll just hit the highlights. The loan amount up the top, $346,000. So they did, just over 10% down. And interest rate, 4.75. As you guys know, those fluctuate every day and have actually been decreasing quite a bit lately. Principal and interest. And then over on the right-hand column, you see where it says, no. This is a 30-year fixed rate loan, never going to change. Then down at the bottom or the middle section there, there's a small portion of mortgage insurance because they didn't put down a full 20%. But then the number that I really like to focus on is that estimated total monthly payment, $2,197. That includes their taxes, insurance, everything. And then at the very bottom, cash to close. They invested about $40,000 into this property. So $40,000 in payment of, let's call it $2,200. And then we're going to walk through the rent numbers. So really basic, regular 30-year fix, nothing fancy, nothing crazy that they had to give up on their loan, just a regular transaction.
And I want to highlight some of these numbers here. So let's talk about mortgage insurance, because this is something I always talk about with my clients, because it's one of those levers you can use on the financing side to move the needle as far as your payments, which can affect cash flow while you're living there. And then once you move out, and it can definitely fluctuate based on what the purchase price and credit score is the main driver, right?
That's right. Yeah. Purchase price, credit score, type of property. There's, I don't know, 10 variables that go into it, but it can vary a lot. You might see somebody that has mortgage insurance of $50. You might see somebody else has mortgage insurance of $250. So it can vary.
And this mortgage insurance is $51.98. So $50 a month.
Super low.
I mean, nothing to worry about right there. I mean, to prepay that, could you ballpark what a prepayment would be on that?
Prepayment on that, let's see, this is $600 a year, would be $4,000 probably to prepay that and eliminate it.
And sometimes that makes sense because that can be a difference between a property not cash flowing and cash flowing once you move out.
Yeah.
But I mean, $50, I mean, I'm sorry, like I'm a big picture person, $50 one way or the other, just like, who gives a damn? It's kind of my attitude.
Yeah. If you can't make if $50 is going to kill your deal, you shouldn't do the deal because it's too close.
Right. And I actually forgot that it was right around 10% down.
Yeah.
And so they did that with all their other, you know, closing costs and other of those fees that add up about $40,000. Now, if they had bought this as a traditional rental, requiring, let's say, about 20% down, they would have been closer to, I mean, what?
Almost $75,000. $80,000. Yeah.
And a higher interest rate.
Yep.
And you know, so all that stuff. And so for less than about half of what they could do as traditional rental property, they're buying this place with minimal mortgage insurance as well.
Mm-hmm.
So moving on to the next slide. And you know what? These numbers are going to be slightly off, and they're actually going to be off in, they actually should be better because I put these in the calculator at 5% down rather than that 10% down payment, just because I'm always used to, hey, we're doing 5%. And I probably didn't have enough coffee when I was running these numbers. So 5%
down. You should have had a Red Bull, Chris.
Oh, no, I should not. I should not. Those numbers would be really off then.
Right.
So 5% down, purchase price in the low 380s, 4.75% interest rate. And I'm assuming about $2,000 a month in rental income while they're living there, since they're going to be maximizing that room by room rental cash flow. I don't quite know what the final number will be because they were actually going to reconfigure the basement and they were still finalizing their ideas as far as what, you know, things they wanted to add, the layout they wanted to do, and of course, how many roommates they want to bring on board to, you know, balance that investing and also just, you know, living there and enjoying it as their primary residence. But it's about $2,000 a month in rental income. So,
let's walk
roommates.
Through that real quick. If they had three roommates, because it's a 4-bed, 3-bath house, right?
Yes.
So they've got to occupy one of the bedrooms.
Yes.
So they have 3 bedrooms to rent out. If they're renting each bedroom for $633 a month, then that's $2,000. $633 a month for bedroom rent is ultra cheap in Denver. I see bedrooms right now going for $950 to $1,100 for a bedroom. It's crazy. So I think $2,000 a month, super reasonable estimate.
Yeah, and I always like to conserve, you know, ballpark low. But like I said, this has got at least 3 bathrooms. They might be adding another one. They're going to be adding some more living space and making it a very comfortable environment. So I think they'll be able to charge a premium for rent as well. Because great, you might have your own bathroom or sharing with one person versus, oh, great, we got 4 dudes sharing one bathroom, which is...
Right. That's never fun.
It's not fun. And I've been there, done that. So the real estate taxes are about $2,300 per year. Property insurance about $1,700 a year. I put in 5% for repairs and maintenance while you're living there as a house hack, because you're just going to take care of a lot of stuff yourself and care for the property
legit.
A lot
yeah,
more.
Yeah, I think that's legit.
PMI, it was about $600, $630 for the year. So that's their $51 times 12. So I didn't put utilities in here because I'm not sure how they're divvying it up. They might make their tenants pay them back directly or just bump up the monthly rents. But it'll kind of wash out one way or the other. But if you guys want to model it yourself, hey, put in $200 a month to cover all the utilities for people living there. Maybe a little higher, depending on how many roommates. But that's not going to be a major number, deal breaker. So while they're living there, their total annual expenses are about $5,900. Leaving them a net operating income of $17,000. And then you subtract out their annual mortgage payments. Oh my gosh, negative cash flow of $5,300.
Oh, I would never buy this deal. Terrible deal. Yeah, don't buy it.
Yeah.
Nope, go to the next one.
So we're obviously being sarcastic because this is them living there. And this is us using very conservative numbers. And I actually think the rents will be a lot higher than I put in there while they're living there. But you got to look at this. You can't just say, oh my gosh, this is a negative 23% cash on cash return. Oh my gosh, it's a 4.5 cap rate. No, they're house hacking it. So those traditional metrics look a lot different, especially while you're living there. It's really hard of any metrics that you can plug in while you're living there. But where else can you live in Denver for $5,300 a year? Only if you're probably renting out someone else's room.
I wouldn't rent my bathroom for $5,300 a year, Chris. I mean, literally, if you want to rent a bedroom in my house, I'm going to charge you more than $450.
Yeah.
Right. And that's the way to think about this, is if they're basically renting their own home, right? They're renting the bedroom that they're living in for $450 a month. That is insanely cheap, right? So let's do the math. Let's say that actually would cost them $1,100 to rent that bedroom. So $1,100 minus $450, they're actually making $550 a month in profit times 12 months. That's $6,600 a year in profit. Not to mention all the other benefits of owning real estate. The property is appreciating, the loan is paying down, they have tax benefits, depreciation, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So we were joking earlier that this is a terrible deal. I think it's a great deal.
Yes.
I would, if I was a young person in this position, this is absolutely what I would be doing.
Yeah. And then you look about once they move out, they'll probably stay there a year or two. They're not moving out on day 366. They're not that super aggressive. They want to go in there, get up and running, get rents in there. And hey, if they're living for, break even, there's not a huge rush to go out there to get the next property. But once they move out, based on the numbers, the very conservative numbers I put in there, they would only need $450 more a month in rent to break even. So we put $2,000 in there. If they rent out, even if they just move out and kept renting out those three bedrooms individually, probably at a higher rent like we can plausibly believe they would get, they're going to be cash flow neutral. And that's not even taking into account depreciation, all this other stuff. So I easily see them being in the positive cash flow.
Absolutely.
Now, it might not be like an amazing cash flow, but they only put 10% down.
Right. They didn't put a lot of money into this, right? And there's a question over here. How would the monthly payments look with 5% down? So actually that $22,717 right there, that is actually the payment with 5% down. That's just the principal and interest payment there right in the center. So
and would that be divided by 12, Joe?
It's going to be about $1,840.
Let's see here. Ooh, $1,891.
Ooh, I forgot to carry the one.
Yes.
It's way off. Very, very good payment with 5% down or with a 10% down. So great, great option there.
Great. If you guys got questions, please keep putting them in there. We are monitoring them and we will answer them. So moving on to house hack number two. So this is actually another house hack in Lakewood. It's near that huge retail development known as Belmar, so like Wadsworth and Alameda. It's right around there. So this property, to give you guys some context on here, this was actually going to be, I call this like our first date tour with people, where it's just, I'm very big on education with people, especially with house hackers and just investors in general. Like, hey, let's do our prep work. Let's do your homework. Let's get a basic strategy. Let's analyze a bunch of properties using the spreadsheets, from your computer. We talk about email back and forth. Once you have that basics down, let's go out and just look at a couple properties in one day that look good on the spreadsheet. Because you can go out there and say, oh, so I'm seeing this in a spreadsheet. but this is what this property actually looks like in real life. Oh, and it just makes your learning curve go vertical. So it's a huge, huge step in the learning process. So for this house hacker, we were actually doing, like I said, our first date property tour. We were looking at this property, and then there was a duplex not far away in Inglewood. So this is a single family home, and we went and looked at the duplex. So we went and saw this place first, and I went out there, me, the client, and then Preston Newberry, and we're like, wow, this place has a ton of potential. And then we went out and we looked at the duplex next. So this place, the single family home was listed right around like $450, and the duplex was listed at, I think it was like $420 or $430. And so it's a cheap duplex. Like, you don't see many duplexes in that low 400 range.
No.
But there's a reason.
Well, I was saying, it must have been kind of busted.
Yeah, so you go up there and it's just, this is what you see in multifamilies a lot of times, that low price point. Like, again, it was like, you know, 1912 build, so it's got that very old character, plus all the maintenance headaches. But man, just a funky layout. And that's what happens with these old cheap duplexes. They're just funky layouts. So you go in there, and I think one side was a 2-1, the other side was a 3-1. So not a great, you know, not great there. And then both sides, like at least on both sides, the bedrooms each had a bedroom that you could, if you put a twin bed in there, that's about all you're getting in there.
Oh, geez.
So not a really a true bedroom, which is obviously going to hurt rents.
Right.
And then just, you know, like the funky layouts of just, you know, why is there a hallway in the middle of the living room?
Right.
You know, why is the, you know, the way the kitchen and the bathroom is lined up? Like, oh, I want to use a bathroom. I got to, like, you know, shimmy in there to get past the toilet, get to the shower. Just that weird stuff.
Yeah.
So we talk about the client and we just say, hey, great. You saw a multi, you saw a single family home. And then we actually said, hey, look, we're not pulling like some sale, you know, salesman stuff, but like that first property we saw in Lakewood, good dude. That's a really good property. That is a wonderful house hack we look for. So, you know, we know this is your first date property tour, but take your time, think about it, but let us know like as soon as possible if you're interested in putting in an offer. And we walk through all the pros and cons of putting offers in and how the contract's friendly to buyers and all this stuff. And we said, look, if you don't want to do it, great, let us know because we're going to call a few other people because this is a wonderful layout. So this person, you know, he'd already had his financing lined up with Joe.
Yep.
He had been great to work with. He'd analyzed a bunch of properties. He did his homework and he said, you know what? Let me think about it. And it's either later that night or the next day, he said, you know what, guys, I want to put an offering on here because like I like it a lot. And we liked it because it had 5 bedrooms and 3 bathrooms. So it was 3 bedrooms upstairs, 2 bedrooms downstairs, and just a great layout. Like there's basically 4 living rooms in this place.
Oh, wow.
3 or 4 living rooms. Yeah, like 3 or 4 living rooms. Plus, you know, has a separate entrance from the back to get down to the garage. It's all fenced in. There's 2 sheds. There's a great deck. And it's just got lots, you know, it's not a gigantic house, but it's very well laid out to where it could be a very comfortable environment for that roommate environment.
Yeah.
And also just, you know, long-term, it's great for a big family or multi-generational family or keep renting out room by room. So we put an offer in, or actually as we were thinking about putting the offer in, it went under contract. Not with us, but with someone else. Okay.
That's why you have to act quickly, Chris. You should come on this webinar that I do with one of my buddies where we talk about acting quickly. Oh, wait, it's this webinar.
But we know that was perfectly fine in some rhyme because we did not want to push the client because this was literally the first property we looked at.
Yeah.
We're like, oh, okay, whatever. But we stay in touch with this thing. We say, look, if anything happens, let us know, yada, yada, yada. Property fell out of contract really quick.
Yep. Often happens. Yeah. Often happens it falls out of contract.
If you're noticing a pattern here, the previous property and this property fell out of contract. And so we put in an offer, not an official backup offer, but we were just in contact with the agent and it fell out within a matter of days. So it was a pretty quick turnaround time. And someone else put the offer in. So I think it was listed at $450, which was a smidge high. And we put an offer in at $440. Ish. And then there was the other offer that came in that was actually higher than ours.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a higher, you know, it's like, you know, $3,000 or $4,000. So not much, but hey, it's $3,000 or $4,000 higher than our offer. But we actually won out on those two offers. And here's a couple reasons why. One was communication. We had been in great communication with the listing agent throughout the whole process. We told him how our client had done his homework. He wanted this. We also had Joe on the loan. Joe hopped on the phone. Talk to the listing agent. And what was the magic word you said?
You know what? This is the one where I knew the listing agent.
Oh, great.
Which happens pretty frequently, actually. Not a transaction that I've done with you, Chris, but another transaction that I had that's closing here in about a week. They had multiple offers. I had done a number of transactions with the listing agent. When I saw the contract come over from the buyer's agent, I said, hey, let me call the listing agent because I know her. This will help. And that's exactly what happened in this scenario. I called the listing agent and said, hey, it's Joe. Remember, we worked on this property together. And they said, oh yeah, that's right. You're the Tuesday update call guy. That's right. I'm calling you every Tuesday, no matter what happens. And it sounds kind of arrogant, but I sometimes am able to help sway that. And I think I was able to help in this transaction.
Oh, no, you absolutely were. And then plus we did a quicker close. I think it was like a 21-day contract, right around the 3-week contract. So, you know, that's definitely on the quicker side when we're doing a 5% down conventional loan. So that worked out really well. But Joe, wait, you work with other real estate agents?
I do. I hate to tell you this.
You crushed me.
You are not the only real estate agent that I know. However, I should not be the only mortgage lender that you know.
Okay. I'll give you all pass on that. That's
Is
fair.
Is that fair?
So getting back to real numbers, like I said, we came in about 10K under asking. And we actually got that property. A big part was our communication. And then just Joe, this is why I steer my clients, say, you got to talk to Joe. He's on top of it because he does help us win contracts.
Yeah.
So I like that. And then plus, our client was good with actually doing a quicker close. He was like, hey, I thought about this. I want to do it. Let's pull the trigger and let's just make it happen. So this is the interesting thing. Just to repeat it, we came in below list. We were not the highest offer, but we still won out, and we weren't an all cash offer.
Right.
We were a 5% down conventional.
Yeah. It doesn't have to be all cash. You don't have to go and be just crazy in what you're offering. Be legit. This is what we can do. This is put your best foot forward. Talk about all the reasons why they should take your offer.
And so again, to get back to property details, like I said, just a phenomenal layout. And I mean, if you want to talk about extra house hacking, because I actually went and looked at the property again. They closed a couple weeks ago. I went and just dropped off a few things. They've got two gigantic sheds that they're not using. I'm like, hey, rent those out to neighbors.
Mm-hmm.
And it's got this great RV parking pad. I'm like, you could rent that out for, you know, I don't know how much, $75, $100 a month or something to a neighbor, rather than them having to drive 3 miles to an RV storage park.
Yeah.
And so not even just renting out room by room, but they could also do some additional income streams based off the property. Something else we like about this, there's actually two washer and dryers in the property. So again, you're talking multiple roommate situations or down the road, a multi-generational family. Man, two washer and dryers are nice.
Big deal.
So one upstairs, one downstairs. So just a great layout. So moving on to the closing statement. Walk us through this, Joe.
Yeah, $418,000 loan. These guys put 5% down. Again, 30-year fixed. You see over there in the comments, nothing can increase, not going to change. Go down to the center section. You'll notice the mortgage insurance is a little bit more on this one than the last transaction. What you see here, it's a little bit bigger loan. They put down a little bit less money. Therefore, you end up with a little bit higher monthly mortgage insurance.
Which is $104. So just say $100.
$100. Yep. Pretty reasonable. Go all the way down to the very bottom. Total cash at closing or total investment, $23,000 to buy a $440,000 property.
Yep.
So pretty darn good in my mind.
And I don't have the exact notes in front of me, but we actually got I think it was a $1,500 or $2,000 back in seller concessions.
Yeah.
Because we went out there, we did the full inspection. And again, even though we were below list price and we were not the highest and best offer, we still came back and we said, hey, we're not going to beat you up on the inspection. But I think this one, there was, high levels of radon. And we said, hey, look, you know, we need to put a radon mitigation system in there.
Yep.
So we got a couple, $1,500, $2,000 back at closing that just went towards the buyer's closing cost. So looking at these numbers here, 5% down, purchase price was right around 440, interest rate 4.625%.
Mm-hmm.
So the plan is, the place is livable as is, definitely can use some updating on the upstairs, all over, you know, just been lived in for a while. I think it was a rental for a while, nothing bad, but you know, something where, hey, if you spend some time painting the place, they did some interesting like paint and like fake bricks in some of the rooms. Like you could just kind of get rid of that stuff and it just makes the place pop, look so much better.
I think it just needs some TLC.
Yes.
It doesn't need a whole rehab. Just need some TLC. Go in there a few weekends, few evenings after work, place would be dramatically different with some paint, carpet, and cleaning.
Yep. And so the client and his girlfriend, they're going to be living upstairs, and they converted one of the bedrooms to a home office because he works from home, and then they don't want to have kind of roommates on that same level. But then downstairs, separate entrance, washer and dryer. There's a kitchenette so it can avoid, you know, the amount of interactions and shared living space you have with your roommates. And like I said, there are like two or three living rooms upstairs, and then there's a gigantic living room downstairs, which is literally bigger than some of the houses I've lived in the past. So like I said, it's just a great layout.
Yeah.
So they can probably get $1,500 or $1,600 a month in rent for the two bedrooms downstairs. I put in here $1,400 a month in rent while they're living up there. Now, the one thing with the downstairs is there's two bedrooms, but they are non-conforming. They have windows, but they're not egress windows. So I'm always a big fan of putting in egress windows in properties, talk to clients about pros and cons. They're doing egress windows as well. So
smart.
That's going to be $3,000, $3,500 a pop.
Smart.
But, you know, they're not worried about the cash right away. They're our similar mindset, high cash reserves, let's leverage up and buy places, and then hold on to this place for 20 or 30 years and build lots of wealth. So they're going to invest that money, and their goal is to have that all that done so they can rent out the place in April. So add the egress windows, new carpet, new paint downstairs, they'll be ready to go. So it'll probably be all that, some, you know, $10,000 from sweat equity, but it's going to be a great long-term setup. So the real estate tax is about $2,200 a year. Insurance is about $1,700 a year. Repairs and maintenance, $900 a year. Their PMI is about $1,250 for the entire year. So while they're living there, they're making about, or they're going to have about $6,000 in expenses, about $10,000 in operating income. But then once you take away the mortgage payments, they're paying $15,000 a year. They're cash flow negative. Again, we're buying another cash flow negative property, Joe.
What a terrible choice.
Right? So why is it really not a terrible choice?
Because it really, if you break down that annual cash flow before taxes, negative $15,000, it costs them about $1,300 a month to live there. Where else are they going to get? The upstairs was three bed, two bath. Where else are you going to get a three bed, two bath home in the Denver metro area for $1,300 a month with a backyard?
Yep.
Right? I mean, great property, great location. You're just using the downstairs basement to subsidize your payment. And instead of them having to live there, see that annual mortgage payment of $25,848? All right. That means it costs them, if they don't have roommates, it costs them, what, $2,150 a month to live there. Or they let some people rent out the basement. Now it only costs them $1,350 a month to live there. So they get all the benefits of living in a property they own. It's appreciating, going up in value, paying down the principal, tax benefits, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. They've got to live somewhere. Where else are you going to live in such a nice place for $1,350?
And they could definitely increase their rental income if they rent out the extra two bedrooms upstairs. But that was the right balance of privacy and personal living space along with an investment.
Right. It's not always about money, right? Sometimes I would like to have my own space and I don't want, you know, Chris Lopez sharing the next room over
Bite
with me.
Bite your tongue.
Oh, well, somebody, another Chris Lopez. You know, sometimes you don't want a roommate. That's okay. It just means you have to spend a little bit more money out of your pocket. These guys can afford it.
Yeah, and their plan is, you know, they'll probably save about, I think, a year and a half or 2 years is what they're thinking right now. And so then it'll be on to house hack number two. So kind of fast forwarding to when they move out in 1 to 2 years is that time frame. They're not looking to move out on day 366. But as a rental, lots of options here with these types of properties. So they can continue renting room by room and definitely charging a premium, like we talked about in the previous house hack, or even charge a premium to renting to a large family or a multi-generational family as well.
Yep.
Because if you got, you know, kids, parents, and grandparents living in the same space, great. Not everyone's on top of each other. So I'm assuming $3,000 a month in rent, which is doable for that area, especially the way they're cleaning up the property and they're making it very livable. It's not going to be like, you know, they're not putting in like granite countertops. It's going to look nice, but it's going to be very comfortable to live in. If they put in $3,000 a month in rent with that same mortgage payment of 5% down, they'll be cash flowing about $2,100 a year. Again, so not amazing cash flow, but they put 5% down and they're still paying primary mortgage insurance.
Right. Yeah, they don't have hardly any cash into this. This is definitely a home run.
Now, if you play this out over what happens over 10 years, over the next actually over the next 10 years, Joe, how much is your mortgage payment increase?
Zero.
How much are rent's going to increase?
More than zero. Yeah. Something, you know, the 40-year average is rents go up by at least 5% per year, year over year. So assuming that trend continues, because it's been true for the last 40 years, hopefully it'll be true for the next 40, rents are going to go up 5% a year for each of the next 10 years. Now, yeah. Some years are better, some years are worse, but you know what I can tell you? That mortgage payment's not changing.
And that's something I talk a lot about with house hackers, because what is your biggest expense? It's your mortgage payment. And it's the only thing that's actually a fixed expense on your balance sheet, and it's your biggest expense. So if you can lock that in, you know what your biggest expense is, and it basically also safeguards you against inflation.
It's inflation protected.
Yes.
It's never going to go up.
Everything else will go up. You know, expenses will go up and income will go up. But the other expenses, they are a small fraction compared to the mortgage payment.
That's right.
So I think our clients, they're stoked about this. And I love these properties because it's not amazing numbers now. It definitely helps because it mitigates the living expenses. But when you take a step back and really look at it in like that holistic financial planning point of view, you just make so much wealth in the long run. And then great, when they move out and buy the next house hack, let's say we're estimating they're making $2,000 a year before the tax benefits of depreciation, even, because that's going to definitely give them more cash in their pocket. Let's just say they're neutral cash flow for that first year they move out. In my mind, whoop-de-doo, because again, your biggest expense is your mortgage. It's fixed. And also, we talk about this, they hold high cash reserves. Like, yeah, we don't need $100 a month. That's not going to make or break us in our you know, living expenses or the property. So if we have to have a month, we have to put a couple grand in or eat a few bucks here and there for the next couple of years, we've got the reserves, we got the income, we are comfortable with it. So this is a long-term wealth-building play.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's easy, too, to look at this and say, oh, they're only making $2,000 a year after they move out. It's not that great of a deal. But you know what? This is based on today's numbers. What if they move out of this property in 5 years? That rent's probably not going to be $3,000 a month. Maybe it's going to be $3,400 a month. And you've got to look at this over the long, long, long term. They're going to make a lot of money off of this property simply by owning it, maintaining it, and renting it out. There's nothing fancy here. They're not doing any sort of crazy fix and flip. They're not having to go do some sort of development. They're not having to take a big risk. And where'd they find this? It was on the MLS.
Yeah, they didn't have to knock on 500 doors.
Yeah, nobody had to really get out of their comfort zone to do this. This was right there on the shelf for anyone to buy, and this will help make them wealthy over the long term.
All right, so let's go here. So that is it for this month's roundup. We covered the market stats. We covered two deals. And what you see on the screen are some upcoming classes/webinars. So a lot of these we teach, you know, maybe once or twice a quarter. But we have a house hacking class coming up. In April, we've got How Many Properties Do I Need to Retire? And then we've got another class coming up called the Burr Strategy. And that's not because it's still a little cold out. That's the buy, rehab, rent. What is it? Ah, I'm screwing those up.
It's buy, what is it? Buy, rehab, rent, refi, repeat.
Yes, that's it.
It's my coolest strategy.
Yes.
It's the Burr.
I try to say that live and I just can't do it. I choke up, you know?
So I want to talk real quick. I want to interrupt you and talk about the Denver March monthly roundup. One really important topic that we're going to cover on that is how to win in competing offers, because we keep running into that and we're going to give you some tips on that. Because I know that's something that comes up. We're going to give you 4 or 5 tips when you have those competitive offers, how we can help you win in those situations. Because we win a lot of those. We don't win them all. I can't say we're 100%, but we're pretty darn good. And we're going to give you some tips that you guys can use.
Yeah. So if you guys are able to come to these, come check out the calendar at denverinvestmentrealestate.com/calendar. If you're listening to future recording, go to the calendar. A lot of these will be up repeating again because these are in-person classes and also recorded webinars. All right. So that's it for this month. Again, my name is Chris Lopez. I'm an agent here at Your Castle, and I love helping house hackers and people buy rental properties. And Joe is a great lender at Castle & Cook.
Chris, thanks so much for having me. I really enjoy this show every month when we do it. Listeners or viewers out there, if we can do anything for you guys, call, text, email, send a carrier pigeon, smoke signal, whatever. Would love to chat with you, love to talk about this stuff, and love to help you with your transactions.
Great. Thanks, Joe. Thanks, everyone.